Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You know what I want.
Not Samson, Greg. Not Samson.
No, I want a top Samson.
Hey, that's pretty fun. It's also pretty bad. I don't know. Watching a game like that, it feels kind of hellacious, hectic, almost like a fever dream to some degree, quite honestly. 128 to 118, the Raptors lose in overtime to the upstart, scrappy, I don't know, up against it, Trailblazers, who also didn't have like anybody available. So a lot of the regular people like Shaedon Sharpe or Jerami Grant or Malcolm Brogdon or anything like that, not available. They did, however, have Anfernee Simons and DeAndre Ayton to drive a lot of their wins offensively. And of course, 9 of 16 from the field, 5 of 8 from downtown, 4 assists, 7 rebounds, 25 points, and a game-high plus 18. Delano Banton helped put the death knell into the Raptors. Of course, on the other side, we have like pretty fun performances from Emmanuel Quickley. I know he has 6 turnovers, but very resilient in this game, quite honestly. Gary Trent Jr. scores 20 points against the Blazers, which meets his requirement of scoring 20 points against, you know, I think 29 of 30 NBA teams. And it took him 26 shots to get there. Like, he was gunning from the start. Grady, not his best game. Abaji, definitely not his best game, but Grady played 39 minutes. So for what people want to see Grady, like, get those reps in, I mean, we're seeing it. They had an awesome connection. There were 2 great plays that he made out of the corner to Quickley, one from the left corner, one from the right corner. And honestly, we're looking at a team that had to grind. And 31 minutes, 80% shooting from the floor, a plus 3 in a game they lost by 12. Chris Boucher was an absolute champion in this game. He sacrificed his body. Honestly, he laid it all on the line for a team that's 23-40 on the season, quite frankly. Not everybody's going to do that. We've seen better teams get more lackluster or less effort out of like staunch players, members of the rotation. And Chris Boucher, in a way that only he can, leaps into these games with aplomb and just explodes them everywhere. Like, the pressure he's able to put on the glass is very palpable and creates so many of the opportunities late in the game. Not only the game-tying shot, obviously the tip-in, but the foul prior to that where he made the 2 free throws. Just being a guy who's like, I'm going to run at the rim and see what happens, it's a hell of a feat, especially when your wingspan goes forever and you're tall to begin with. And how he imbued energy into this game, I thought was like incredible. I thought it was awesome. Here to talk about this insane fever dream of a game with me, Jack Quantrill from the Drop Step podcast. We've collaborated before on a long form version of this podcast, just talking NBA at large. But Jack, it's, by the way, everyone over in England, that's where Jack is. What time is it there?
Now, you don't want to know, Samson. It's 5:45 a.m. at the moment, man. But
and you watched this game? Well, I hope you did, because we're talking about it. So you stayed up?
Yeah, of course I did. This would be a bad podcast if I hadn't watched this game. But I got a little nap in before, and I was worried in that first quarter. I was majorly worried we were going to come on and talk to no one. And I was just going to say, Samson, it's 6 a.m. Thanks for the offer, man. But like 5 people are going to listen to this. But yeah, what a game. You seem buzzed.
I am a little bit buzzed, honestly. You know, it was exciting. It was, of course, like, you know, I tweeted this out. Overtime isn't as fun when all it is jackassery. And the Raptors had significant jackassery in overtime. Like, the first play off tip, they allow a straight, like, just Ayton runs to the rim for a lob. The second bucket that the Trailblazers score, Banton goes down after making a contact layup. He's a sweaty NBA player and quickly is running back into the play and slips on his sweat stain on the floor as Kelly Olynyk's trying to lead him up court. And then the Blazers get the ball back. And you're just looking at it like the Blazers are switching everything and they're doubling quickly. Gary Trent Jr. is not going to beat a switch by driving. Grady is not beating a switch. Like, we're looking at what Kelly Olynyk, who's getting to the nail, killing his dribble and being like, I don't know if I can muscle my way anywhere from here. He's throwing the ball away. You know, underrated 5 turnovers from him this game. Like, I know he had some good shot making. He finished with 8 assists, but 5 turnovers and just jackassery, I think. But, like, significant gumption to get to that point. I felt proud of, you know, the young men watching that game.
At this point in the season as well, you know, this is the point. Scotty's out, RJ's out. You sort of think, let's see if IQ can integrate into the team. Let's see what, you know, Grady looks like in his second start of his career. But no, they really like left it all out there. And I think sometimes these things just go one of two ways where the Blazers very easily could have, you know, sort of walked into that overtime shocked, shell-shocked. You know, they don't know what's happening. But I think sometimes when you go on a comeback of that magnitude, it just sort of takes it all out of you. And you feel like getting to overtime is the real victory. And, you know, for the fans, I feel like that's partly right. You know, we saw the effort tonight. We saw the process. I was quite worried about Manuel quickly in the first half of this game. I thought he was really sort of struggling. My God, did that guy pick it up, right? Mm-hmm. Like, just really, really impressive game coming off the Suns game as well. I think it's a credit to him that he's been able to string together some really good performances despite having to shoulder so much load.
The adjective I think most apt for quickly is resilient. Over these games, he's seeing a lot of really aggressive coverages that are trying to get the ball out of his hands. Then he's watching as he releases the ball, the offense turns to nothing. So you see him late in games fighting that. Like, they want to blitz and recover. He's like, okay, well, I'm going to try and take this blitz to the end point so that you finally switch. I want to get you far enough up court that you want to try and catch up, you know, catch back up. And he's fighting it. And then even towards the end of the game on the layup that rolled off the rim is like, you see, he's seeing where the defense is coming from. He knows he's going to see a lot of attention. And kind of like, you know, since you're from England, like Thierry Henry, you know, you don't got to beat 5 guys. You got to beat 1 if you split down the middle. And like, he's just seeking space for himself and he pursues it. And it wasn't like the most efficient game. It wasn't the easiest. From like 7 assists to 6 turnovers is ugly, no matter how you slice it. And of course, a couple of those turnovers were just like miscommunication. Like Chris Boucher not rolling into the where he's supposed to roll is not ideal, obviously. But yeah, I thought resilient. I thought impressive from that standpoint. Can I give you some background on Delano Banton and the Toronto Raptors?
Go for it, man. The revenge game. I mean, where was this jumper? Where was it? He was just, he was locked in tonight, right?
He left it in preseason last year and he's picked it up again now. It's never been a huge part of his game, but he's always been such an interesting finisher and a guy who can push pace. And obviously you see like all the best aspects of his game tonight, but I was sitting in on that press conference when Nick Nurse got fired and everybody's asking questions about like, you know, why is this happening? What is the plan going forward? And I asked Masai about like, you know, the development of the team and how they've been approaching that. And he answers and he says that, you know, it's important to see the players that they draft play. And it's kind of like this subtle shot at like, maybe, you know, Nick Nurse isn't playing guys. And he mentions Delano Banton. He mentions Jeff Doughton Jr. You know, and Koloko, I think, got a decent amount of run. And obviously what has happened with his career, we hope he gets healthy and gets back to things. But then we see Darko's introductory press conference and Joe Wieskamp, Precious Achiuwa, Christian Koloko, Jeff Doughton Jr., and Delano Banton are there. None of those guys play for the Raptors anymore, man. And Delano, they didn't, like, I don't even know if they offered him a contract. He just signed. So they, like, held him up as, like, this developmental guy, this beacon of hope. And then he just signed on a minimum elsewhere and he gets that, you know, that revenge. Coco says, where's the Rexdale shadow, Samson? That's right, he does it for Rexdale kids like me. The joke, Jack, is I live in this part of Toronto where Delano Banton grew up. So, but that's... anyway, what did you think about Delano's performance?
I was so ridiculously impressed. I think that the broadcast team, I really like the Portland broadcast team. I think they do a great job of sort of integrating stats and analytics into the commentary. And whenever they're talking about a three-point shooter that doesn't have a good percentage, like they mentioned this about Tumani Kamara a couple of times, they say, but he's got a sweet looking stroke. So it's like they go away from the analytics straight away. Sure. It's like, this shot looks like it's going to drop in the future. And I just think... The broadcast team sort of mentioned having almost like 2.5 to 3 ball handlers on the court when they were able to go to Simons, when they were able to go to Henderson and Banton made a really big difference. And I think that he formed a nice sort of like triumvirate in two separate areas of the Blazers team, where on one end, he's this sort of third option ball handler that can get them out of sticky situations or take advantage of, you know, sort of advantages created upstream in possessions. But on the other hand, they also have Tumani Kamara, they have the Murray brother. Oh my God, where's it gone?
Chris.
I keep on wanting to go Kyler, like Keegan, Kyler, too many Murrays.
Well, Kyler Murray's the big quarterback.
Yes.
That's a famous name.
This is it. Good. I'm glad that I'm not just plucking it from anywhere. But like they've got Chris Murray, they've got Tumani Kamara, they've got Matisse Thybulle, and they've got Delano Banton as these sort of four switchy guys that they can have do a fairly credible job of like guarding Emmanuel Quickly out on the perimeter. And when you've only got one guy that can really sort of generate advantages for you, I think that came up really clutch. And, you know, the shooting was just on another level. He was unconscious.
Having him go 5 for 8 is a pretty fun, like, turn of events, I think, honestly, because that is, I think the term swing skill is probably used too liberally and people identify shooting as a swing skill maybe too liberally, because everyone can shoot better, of course, but Delano Banton is one. He's a guy where that really is apt, where there's so many aspects of like his progressive reads, his finishing at rim, that would blossom if he were able to draw bigger closeouts. And he didn't necessarily draw those closeouts today, but he hit over top of them, the shorter closeouts. And, you know, all the credit to him. DeAndre Ayton, 30 and 19. And I think a really good example was the shot he missed at the very end, where he and Kelly Olynyk are matched up. They're locked up. And he just pushes him aside and has full clearance to try and make that at the end. That is a microcosm of what happened in this game. It's just sheer size on the inside. The Raptors, you know, I used the term gumption earlier on in the podcast. They had to try and overcome that mismatch repeatedly with just gumption, with like, we got to care a little bit more. OG3 here says, big IQ game and our lottery odds increase. That's a win, brother. I know some people definitely take that as a win. I'm not discounting that. I'm not sure exactly what... I think the Raptors might be a little bit far out of like dropping another spot, and they're definitely like not within reach of jumping a spot. They're in this limbo state where I'm not really sure exactly what they achieve with wins or losses. But all you want to see is fun performances. And I think this one, especially towards the end, was chock full of them. Any thoughts on Chris Boucher? Like, I got to get that from you.
So it sounds like you were talking about him as I joined, but what I thought we really saw was, and it's sort of like what you were mentioning with Kelly earlier with DeAndre. I thought that Kelly had a really nice game on the offensive end. There were just a couple of moments in the first half where Toronto really didn't have anything going, where I was like, wow, you know, live dribble pass straight into under the basket. You find someone for a quick layup. And it's like, this is the kind of guy that I want to watch. If I could play basketball like Kelly Olynyk, I think he's the guy that I'd choose. But then Chris comes in.
Can I tell you something?
Go.
You can play basketball like Kelly Olynyk. Like, that is an achievable... It's an achievable aesthetic. Maybe not NBA level, but you can mimic some of the things for sure.
I'm going to get to Mexico one summer and you're going to see it's not going to happen. But I thought that in the second half, just having that second guy that you could potentially have come out and help with Ayton on the inside, or even just give Kelly a little bit of a breather. Like, it's one thing asking a guy to do it for a couple of possessions a quarter, but just being able to give Kelly a break, because in that first half, they were running so much action off ball just to try and get Ayton open in the post. I thought that it made a really big difference, and just someone else to help out on the boards. I think I saw the tweet, like you said, the guy to be sacrificing his body at 23 and 40, it just makes a big difference. And it's one of those, like, if I'm one of the longest tenured players on this team and I'm doing that, no one else has any excuse not to do that as well. And I don't know if he stays with the team like past this off season. I don't know what the contract situation is, but he's almost like a, they should have something in the NBA where it's not like we're retiring your jersey, but he should get a plaque somewhere saying Chris Boucher played meaningful minutes at this stadium.
He is the, as far as like pieces of the roster, the last bastion of the championship team. He's the last guy there. Of course, he didn't play minutes like really leading up. Like he wasn't really, he wasn't on the floor when they won the finals or anything like that. Neither was OG Anunoby, to be fair. But he's part of it. You know, the very fabric that makes up the Raptors, the championship version of them, of course, he's a part of it. And as you said, like the longest tenured Raptor who has been, you know, spending a lot of time on the bench recently. He came alive last game, got to play, you know, heaps, gets to play heaps in this game. For him to just like lay it all out on the line repeatedly in a lot of conversations I've had with Chris. And like, this is something a lot of people who talk with him would vote for, is like, he's Chris. He is Chris, like to the full extent of himself. And that is not just seen on the court, but it's just a guy who lives life that way. And the punch he brought to the game not only improved it for the team that was trying to win, but for anybody who was tuning in, like late league pass watchers who were like, ooh, they got to see something truly special. And to not be the most talented guy on the floor ever, to not be the most famous guy on the floor ever, but to be somebody who can step onto a floor and change the fabric of a game is a really special quality. And we saw that from him. I do want to get from like the outside perspective, Grady Dick, you know, he goes 3-for-10 in this game. He goes 2-for-7. He rimmed out on that step back, like that pound dribble step back above the break three late. I thought something might happen with that. I was like, ooh, I need that to drop in. And as far as like the Grady Dick of it all, I'm curious what you thought of the performance.
Yeah, I think he was quiet throughout a lot of the game, but he had two of my favorite plays. There was a moment, it was, I think it was 84-79. So we're sort of getting towards the end of the third quarter. Yes, yes, this is it. Exactly. You know, quickly is getting double teamed in the half court, fires it up the line. I feel like Grady's got someone on him. You know, it's not sort of the range where he can pull up. He drives really hard into a crowded paint and the angle that he creates for that bounce pass. And then I think that's to McDaniels, who then plays it to quickly, who hits another above the break three, which is a pretty common theme in this game. And then I'm really enjoying the connection that those two seem to be forming. There was a nice moment where quickly kicked it to Grady in the corner. Grady again drives and then reverses it back. And, you know, as a guy that's been watching a lot of Reed Shepard tape recently, reversing it back to the guy for an even better shot, is, it's just becoming one of my favorite things in basketball. I just think that the flashes are there. And, you know, like we said, sort of second ever start in the NBA, he played big, big minutes tonight. And I think the fact that he grew into the game, considering the fact that we were talking about conditioning issues earlier in the season, I think that's, you know, sort of a massive progression, really.
It's really cool to see, like, because in a lot of times, all you want to do really from a, let's say, back end of a lottery pick, what we're seeing is a guy, you want to see flashes. And we've seen this big, long stretch at this point where the three-point shot returns to normalcy. He's like 38% on the season, maybe 37% now with a 2-for-7 game. He didn't shoot it well last game. But he's like, he got it back to normal. He's not, as far as like on the season, he's not hitting a higher percentage of threes than people thought, but things return to normal. So we're looking, there's a baseline we have, and we're looking for flashes. Him being able to like play make off the bounce for those two massive plays, the quickly three out of the corner, the quickly three above the break, huge, like game, huge plays in the, you know, in the, I guess the flow of the game. And then also like being able to take it middle and hit a fading midi. That was also really nice. You know, he missed the three, but he's got like these no dip threes that he's testing out in the corner, all that kind of stuff. You know, prompts help says it seems like he learns fast. His reading of the game is one of the biggest motivators of his success and one of the biggest motivators for the Raptors' interest in him as a prospect. 3-for-10 is not good. 2-for-7 is not good. There were a long, quiet stretches, but I come away from this game being like, I saw some good stuff from Grady. And that's all you can hope for down the stretch of the season. I don't think he'll be in like takeover mode or anything like that. He's a secondary player through and through. But to see some of this stuff popping off, I think is extremely encouraging.
Can I ask you a question about the Blazers? Did you feel like you were watching an old Toronto Raptors team tonight? I thought that, like, especially in the first half, there was like a really clear highlighting. And I know that Barnes is out, I know that Barrett is out, and I know that Poeltl is out, but I thought there was a real clear, like, wow, this Raptors team is really going in a different direction. They've got Grady Dick starting, they've got Kelly Olynyk at the five, and they're playing against, you know, 7-foot DeAndre Ayton, who isn't missing a shot to start the game. They're playing against, like we've said, sort of these big wings in Kamara, Thybul that can be really physical as well. Even when Scoot came into the game, I was really sort of noticing that physique. It felt a little bit more like we were watching a team more with the Raptors ethos. And maybe that's the reason why Delano Banton's gone there and he's landed in a spot that seems to suit him quite well.
There's this lineup that during the 2021-22 season just won an insane amount of minutes, and it featured Pascal Siakam at point guard. You know, they typically featured like four wings slash forwards, and like the fifth spot could be a flex position. And I call them like the Funk Fest Quartet because they played such funky basketball. And I believe it was Henry Ward, who's now, you know, he's a pro scout for the Grizzlies, but I believe he coined the term Funk Fest in regards to the Raptors, if I remember correctly, but on a podcast we did years and years ago. But yeah, I think the Blazers, as you say, like Tumani Kamara, Chris Murray, you know, Delano Banton, Thybul, like you see it. They're playing funky basketball. They're using their length to switch across places and to use some of that like democratic rim protection, in that the length kind of multiplies as you all swarm ball handlers towards the rim. And then if anybody can go out and push, you pursue more of your own like transition opportunities. And since you have more length, like this was the funny thing about the Raptors in Scottie's rookie season, Delano's rookie season, is Delano was above the 90th percentile as far as like offensive rebounding rate for wings. Scottie was above the 90th percentile in the same category. And so was Justin Champagny. They basically just brought in a bunch of guys who will just go eat offensive glass and then leaned their system into doing that. And to see them mimic that to some degree, the Blazers, and find success and also get the three-point variance on their way, because I know they said Kamara, like, he doesn't shoot it well, but he's got that sweet stroke. 2-for-4. Hit too early on. Banton, 5-for-8. Thybul, 3-for-5. I know Blake's sitting over there, but I kept saying during the game, like, not death by Thybul. Like, please not death by Thybul late in the game. And yeah, what would you make of it, those funky lineups?
I think it's really interesting. So one of the things that I wanted to bring up is sort of the parallel in payroll that these two teams are going to have going forward. Like, I think it's interesting that these two teams are clearly going in, you know, I think you could say that the Raptors are pivoting. They're probably hoping to be competitive next year. And there are rumors around the Blazers camp that they're also seeking to be, you know, sort of at least a play-in team next year. And the fact that they've both got these really big payrolls is really interesting. You know, you look at some of the players that didn't play for the Blazers tonight. They have Malcolm Brogdon out. They have Jeremy Grant out. Obviously, Shaedon Sharpe is due to come back into the lineup. So I think it's really interesting when you have a high lottery pick due to come into the roster this year, when you've got to integrate Shaedon Sharpe back in, because it looks like Scoot is sort of hitting his groove as well. Why not gamble on these guys? Why not say, right, we are going to trial 3-4, 6-6, 6-foot-6 to 6-foot-9 guys that have this real length, that have this real defensive tenacity. And the fact that they're able to get them all on the floor at the same time, that was something that confused me a little bit from the Raptors' perspective. I don't know if it was just sort of like a lack of athleticism or trying to do this democratic rim protection that we spoke about with the Blazers, but I feel like when you are having Thybul and Kamara share the court, shouldn't, you know, you be able to sort of force the ball to them a little bit more? Shouldn't you be able to sort of protect the rim a little bit more? I'm not quite sure why the Raptors, that it sort of felt like they gave up both things tonight a little bit. Maybe that's because Ayton is just a massive mismatch for Kelly and the other guys hit their threes. But did you see anything sort of schematic where it's like, oh, I'm not, well, not sure about that?
So the thing is, like, schematics are good. The players need to act out those schematics. And you'll see, like, the Raptors are playing kind of a hodgepodge team at this point. And not everybody plays in scheme all the time. And it's not necessarily, like, very clean. And that's like a huge problem for these Raptors defensively, and something that they had a better feel for it later on in the game. But as far as like giving up both, the Raptors have a huge problem currently on their roster. Emmanuel Quickley has not been impressive climbing over screens or guarding at the point of attack since becoming a Raptor. Gary Trent Jr. certainly isn't. Sometimes his ball pressure without screening help can be like impressive. Grady is obviously not going to be doing that. We're talking about a lot of guys who are a little bit more impressive in like help side. So even though, you know, it's in your mind, you're like, oh, force the ball out to like Kamara or Thybulle, we're talking about the Raptors who probably don't have the means to provide like the ball pressure. And even if Kelly Olynyk is the five, do they have the means to provide like these blitzing packages necessarily to move the ball out of like the point guard's hands? Like Scoot Henderson was probably like, I wish you'd blitz with Kelly. I'm going to split that in an instant and go punch it on somebody, right? And we also saw that with Anfernee Simons. They got a little bit better at it with Chris being able to step out on guys, right, and switch those actions. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's a personnel problem. And the Raptors have a huge personnel thing with their point of attack defense right now. And, you know, the Blazers, Anfernee Simons is a really interesting player. And he can definitely produce offensively. Scoot Henderson, I still am like a very firm believer in his craft as a playmaker and a creator. But that's not world-ending talent to crumble your defense. And the Raptors still had a lot of trouble maintaining their shell. And no matter how much attention you pay, if you have like sometimes it's a skill problem, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes you just don't have the facilities to take away either. And it's just like the offense can choose whatever they want to do whenever they come down the floor. But I was really impressed by the two Blazer guards tonight. Like, I feel like there's been a lot of chat about Emmanuel Quickley sort of getting into his jump stop, sort of picking up his dribble early. I saw that S did a piece a little bit earlier on. It was just like a video breakdown earlier in the week. Like, here are some points where Quickley can probe with his dribble a little bit more and prolong playmaking opportunities. I was really impressed with how Scoot just, he never seems to pick up his dribble. He always seems to be in constant motion. There were moments where it's like he's beat his guy, he's so in the dust, and he's still snaking to the other side of the court. It's I think that the progression that we've seen from him over the last few months, considering where he came in sort of like at base level as a rookie to now, they made a point on the broadcast. I think he made 6.8 free throws a game in February, which was like third in the NBA. This is a rookie that we're talking about. I think we can firmly believe in Scoot Henderson. And, you know, even the jumper was falling. What were you feeling during that first half? Because I really was just like, are we even going to be doing a podcast tonight?
Well, I do the podcast no matter what, first of all. Yeah. But during the first half, I was like, the big swing here is that the Blazers have a more dependable offense inside the arc that will subsidize everything. They can go to that. And not to mention, like, Ayton is making pull-ups from, you know, like 14 feet, which, good. He can definitely make that shot. Was making it a little bit higher rate than usual. But also, it was like some of the swing factors here are just like, guys are making threes that don't typically make them. And the Raptors, everybody was missing threes. Of course, it came back around. But earlier on, it felt like, you know, a crazy variance. I wasn't ready to watch the Raptors lose by 20. Like, if this was a really good team, I think, like, yeah, you're in the hole, you might stay there. But these Blazers, I felt like the Raptors, I wasn't expecting an overtime. I wasn't expecting them to draw even. But I was like, we'll get a bit of a game here. And we got a better game than I could have ever imagined. And I think some of that is just like variance coming back around, to be quite honest with you. That's just how the NBA shakes out now. Like, lots of games take that shape over time. Is like, you know, it's a 12-point lead in 2004 is like death, terrible.
Yeah.
A 12-point lead here is like nothing. It could be gone in a minute and 14 seconds or something like that. So the Raptors, they made some changes personnel-wise. They made some changes in their approach defensively. They bottled things up a little bit better. And they hit some threes on offense. And quickly, like, he brought it all. He put it all out there. His ability to, like, turn the defense over, get them into motion, mixed with Boucher willing to, like, go and pick up extra possessions and battle. really helped elevate what the Raptors were doing, not to like an impressive degree, but to a degree to compete with these Blazers. And we watched the team like battle back into it. It was fun basketball. It wasn't good basketball. None of it was good, but it was fun. And that's like, yeah. Those are the best games when you're not a very good team. It's like when you're scrapping. And, you know, I commend all the people on the roster. I commend whatever the coaching staff said is like, you know, battle. I'm going to ask you selfishly, did you get a chance to read my quickly piece from today?
I have not read your quickly piece from today. I think,
Blake's laughing.
I tell you what, we'll finish the podcast at 7. I'll get right into it.
No, you go to sleep after this, brother. Don't you worry about it.
No, what have you got in there? What am I looking forward to?
No, I just want to ask if you'd seen, because I put a collection of like the extra dribble clips and kind of taking it. And I wanted to kind of like compare and contrast Scoot, who always like gnashes the pick and roll. And as you said, always, I imagine since he had such an easy athletic advantage, his coaches probably told him like how important it is to play at multiple speeds at all levels. Because if you just play at one as you're growing up, you might play at one at the NBA level and that's just death. You can't do that. But I thought that quickly and Scoot to varying degrees, you know, I used the word resilient earlier on, but it's been cool to see quickly kind of like add more of that into his package lately, extend these drives with a Nash or with going into jail or using just an extra dribble. Cause there's been some like Gortat screens that Kelly has kind of introduced into the offense that other guys didn't really set. Jakob is kind of, I think he fears those a little bit and the fouls that come along with them. And just to see him and Scoot kind of like trading those types of plays, I thought was really interesting. But Scoot, I kind of want to stick with Scoot just for a couple more minutes overall. As far as like being an engine of a team, do you see what you need to see there?
Yeah, I think I did tonight, definitely. I think, you know, that first half we really sort of saw there are a couple of times where he got the mismatch. I don't know if it was sort of the minutes where Chris Boucher was in, but he was able to threaten the drive to the hoop and then pull back from the mid-range, which is what we heard about so much during the draft. I'm pretty sure I saw both right and left-handed skip passes to either corner at different stages today, and he throws those with such velocity. And I just think, to come back to this resilience point, Scoot attacks the rim with such like reckless abandon. Yes. And so far this year, from an efficiency standpoint, it hasn't worked. He's a rookie playing for not a great team in the NBA, but sometimes just the mere fact to sort of the attitude to say, I don't care that my numbers aren't great right now. I know that this is the thing that I need to do to get to be the player that I want to be. I think that his mentality has been in the right place. The fact that he can now sort of, not now, leverage the mid-range, we'll have to see if that sort of sticks. But as long as that shot comes along, and I think that Blazers sort of development team has a history of coaxing along shooting out of players. You know, I don't know what Anthony Simons was before he came into the Blazers franchise. I don't know if 11 games with the Portland franchise has sorted out Delano Banton's, 3-point shot, but they seem to have a decent track record of sort of developing that talent. And I think he's just one of these guys that's probably going to need another couple sort of like advantage creators around him, but in terms of being that primary guy, he's got the I'm him about him.
He's always impressed me a bunch, and he is going uphill in the NBA being a very small guard for the position. And it's kind of crazy because a 6'2 guard used to be like you had a bit of size at the position, and now it's like 6'5 or bust for a point guard. Is like Emmanuel Quickly, he does not look big out there, but he's like 6'4, 6'5. If you would put him in like 2011, that's John Wall size. That's a mammoth at the position. And Scoot is definitely a throwback. And there's so much stuff that he has to contend with at a smaller size, but he has the athleticism to overcome a lot of it. And I think he has the pacing and the understanding of that to get to like winning spots on the floor. And the jump shot is obviously going to help a bunch. Like the more it progresses, that's obviously exactly what he needs to be working on more than anything else. But he has a great like read for pacing in the pick and roll. I think he has a good eye for what his partner is doing in those situations. And I've been a Scoot believer for a long time. It'd have to be like, we'd have to be like 4 years in, and it'd have to be like no improvements finishing for me to be like, okay, I'll finally put it to rest. But even though he only shot 42% from the field in this game, you know, 13 points, 5 assists, 26 minutes, it was a pretty impressive performance from him. And that's all Portland wants to see. He makes a return. He had an adductor injury. There's some like explosiveness that comes along with that, that he might be a little bit like ginger coming back, something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really impressed with him. Did anybody else stand out to you in this game between the Raptors and the Blazers?
Between the Raptors and the Blazers, I wanted to make a point about quickly, and I'm sure you might have this in your piece, just the fact that he enabled to have the two bigs on the court because he spaces so far behind the arc. Like, he's really got that Eric Gordon, whether he's pulling up from deep or whether he's spotting up as well. Just the fact that he's just creating more space for you to have the two bigs on the floor. I thought that was sort of some really important floor raising, almost like we can have suitable offense here. We can have space for Gary Trent Jr. to operate. We can have space for Grady to operate as well. And I think that's going to be really important when Scotty comes back, when RJ comes back as well. The fact that he can be so useful both on and off the ball. But I wanted to do a little 5 minutes on DeAndre Ayton, because I might be making this up, but I think I remember when Kristaps Porzingis was traded to the Wizards, there was talk that the Raptors were interested then. And I feel like over that offseason, there was brief mm-hmm. chat about DeAndre Ayton, like, oh, he has admirers within the Raptors, you know, front office, etc. What do you think of him? Because I just think, like, if he was 10% better at, you know, sort of the free throw line stuff that we're talking about, he just looks like a 90s big sort of stuck in a 2020s game. But I was really impressed with how he defended tonight. And I think that he was really impressive against Quickly in some of those pick and roll actions.
Certainly. When you have that type of size, you really can funnel. And being able to funnel is a powerful, powerful thing at the NBA level. Mm-hmm. The tough thing was, and like there was, you know, the big piece that was written at Raptors Republic was by Makai Bruce, who wrote like why the Raptors should trade for Ayton. And he was more sold on it than I was, of course. I wasn't fully in on Ayton. But Ayton is a guy who it can be frustrating at times because you see like it waxes and wanes as far as like his effort and commitment to a play style and to just like effort on the court in and of itself. And he has a significant amount of touch. He has a significant amount of size. And when motivated, is more impressive as a mobile big than a lot of guys who are that size. He just is on a massive contract and that stuff waxes and wanes. And there's been like significant stagnation to his game, because he's probably not playing the best basketball of his life. That happened with the Suns back in like 2021, right? So Ayton, I enjoyed watching him tonight. I thought he was sublime. And anytime he plays this well, I would enjoy watching the film. He ate the Raptors up. 14 and 25 from the field, 30 points, 19 rebounds, you know, plus 10. Those are monstrous numbers. And while the Raptors are thin in the front line, you still got to give the guy credit. You go out there and grab 19. You can't, there's no way, there's no getting around it. It's impressive. So very like just maybe not impressed, but just happy to see him have one of his great performances that sometimes he does have. And, but overall still on like the, you know, this is maybe like my seventh or eighth Ayton game this season. I still come away so often being like, it can be so passive. He can settle into a passenger in a game so quickly, and he can be so like contact averse on the inside, and he can get trapped in that, you know, above the restricted area type of game. And for a guy who's so big, she's like, brother, go eat. Like, let the big dog loose. Coco says feckless. Yeah, sometimes feckless. I don't know. What are your thoughts on Ayton?
I'm sort of with you, but I just think the general discourse is sort of shaped around him by, oh, he doesn't get to the free throw line, and a lot of it sort of starts there and ends there. And I think when you look past it, it's we judge so many players by the size of their contracts now. You know, it's sort of like the Tobias Harris effect, where you get maxed and suddenly you're the worst player in the league, right? And I just think that, you know, if Ayton was $10 million cheaper a year, then we'd be having very different conversations about him, if that makes a lot of sense. But
That makes so much sense. That's a tremendous point. Of course, yeah.
I think there might come a point in a Blazers uniform where he might come good. And I think that they've ran really simple offense this year, the Blazers. They made a point again on the broadcast, and I've noticed this in the film as well, because I keep in touch with the Blazers. Like, they run so much pick and roll. And when it comes to sort of fourth quarter offense as well, it's always, you know, get the ball to Anthony Simons, have Ayton come up and screen, have him roll, have him dive, etc. I think that playing sort of away from Chris Paul, as terrible as it sounds, because Chris Paul is a guy that makes like the big man's life really, really simple.
Sure.
He kind of looks like a guy, like, if you're just reducing him to the simple big man stuff, you're not really going to get the full DeAndre Ayton experience, because he can shoot 50% from the mid-range. He can sort of shoot from that sort of free throw line area. I've never really seen the playmaking with him, which is maybe a little bit of an issue, but it's also the defensive mobility for me as well. I think that he is one of the best defenders when it comes to being flexible in pick and roll coverage and simultaneously being able to handle the bigger fives in the league.
I thought in the Suns' first big run, that finals run, I know Mikal Bridges is like the defender from that era of the Suns, but I thought that like Ayton was the defining defender for that run. He was so impactful in turning off the water. And sometimes he gets back to that level. It's not as consistent. You know, worse teams are just not as consistent. When you play on a worse team, typically your game is not as consistent. But what you bring up too is about the guy, his shooting touch, being able to operate in the mid-range. And what the Trailblazers did early on was like occupying so much of the Raptors' defensive effort with contending with his early work. Yeah. That pays off down the line. You know, the Raptors not being able to contain or like set the edge later in the clock. Some of that has to do with like four straight possessions of Ayton putting in a bunch of work in the early part of the clock and making guys fight and making those matchups seem like hellacious. And, you know, like you're walking uphill both ways. So I think that there's definitely more you can glean from Ayton, especially if he brings his hard hat to the game. His size can really change and like create a cascading effect for so many different matchups. And it did tonight. And I forgot to say it when we were at our highest concurrent viewers, but to the people listening right now, make sure to like the video. It helps promote it afterwards and it's free. So all that good stuff. Jack, before we get out of here, anything else you want to talk about?
I wanted to say one more thing on the Ayton point, because I think we could probably both agree that Scoot had his best minutes in this game in the first half. He had his best minutes when Anthony Simons wasn't on the floor, and he had his best minutes when Duop Reith was on the floor. I thought it was really interesting how they're sort of making his life a bit simpler in terms of, let's allow you to access the rim. Let's have a guy that doesn't need to park himself at the free throw line, sort of try and establish post position. I think it's something that I'd be considering as a Blazers fan going forward. Like, yes, we've got this guy that's really talented as a five. He's got these skills, but how is he going to synergize with our all-star sort of style, high lottery pick point guard who's sort of showing really advanced skills now? So I think that he might be hitting the trade market again. I doubt he ends up in Toronto. It looks like they go in another direction. But just in terms of like the fit with those bigs, what I came away from like watching the Raptors tonight was, I think that you guys are going to have a lot of fun watching RJ, Scotty, Kelly minutes, and then watching Jakob IQ minutes next year. I just think if you put Kelly next to Scotty, next to RJ, next to these really strong drivers, and if you give him that guy that can help on the back line, I think you're going to see some really fun hoops. And what do you think the record is going to be for the Raptors for the rest of the season? Do you think they're going to get to 30? I know you've been asked this a ton.
Probably not getting to 30, which is totally, that's totally okay. I do have thoughts on Scoot plus Ayton. There is the big thing with Scoot and smaller guards is quickness and being able to take divergent paths to the rim. So obviously Scoot is much better without a guy parked occupying the other driving lane because he's smaller. If he's limited to one side of the rim, the upside defender is going to time him up. And that's like a huge problem. If it's cleared out, he can access both sides of the rim because he's so athletic and can change, you know, finish with both hands, use the rim as a defense, like as a protector against his finish, beat the other big to the glass. And it's kind of up to Scoot becoming a guy who's so prolific in that short mid-range area to save Ayton's spot on the team if they're prioritizing Scoot. I think because to change how the dropping big or the big who's like, you know, turn and chase is guarding Scoot there and to make him step up a little bit quicker and worry so that he can start accessing the other driving lane as a passer, or so he can start incorporating some of those like in and out, you know, little dribbles like the hang and push so that he can access the rim on the same side. It's just the diversification of his game, which may not necessarily happen. Also, Coco said, are we getting a Brody cameo? He's right there in the cat thing. So my apologies. He's too comfy to come over here and hang out with us. But yeah, that's kind of where I sit. As far as like Ayton and the Raptors, I probably not. But there is, you're identifying something real. Everybody's been waiting for the Scotty IQ synergy. It hasn't popped off like anybody thought it would. But the stuff with Jakob is real so far. The points per chance stuff with Second Spectrum is not impressive for IQ plus anyone on the Raptors yet. But I think there's a lot of stuff you can see has a potential to work, especially between Jakob and IQ. And as far as like just Scotty with RJ, who provides like a driving force to the opposite side of the rim and, you know, a different type of lane, is really important. That rim pressure and Kelly being like this really fun in-betweener. Like, I know this wasn't necessarily Kelly's best game, but 6-for-10 from the field, 3-of-4 from downtown, 8 assists, 5 turnovers are ugly, yes, but, you know, Kelly battled and grinded. And I think that there's a lot of stuff for him with Scotty in the future, but that's mostly how I feel about all of that, I suppose. How about you?
Nice. Well, it's good. I've just started a whole new like podcast topic just right at the end of the podcast. This is excellent guesting here. You know, we're just getting into something completely different. I just think that from the perspective of having a guy that can take away a little bit of the playmaking burden from Scotty, having a guy that can space out to three, that can space out to above the break as well, which is just as important, Scotty's going to have more room to operate next year than he's probably ever had, I'd assume. You know, if Grady is getting more consistent minutes, if you have RJ space on that left side of the floor as well. I think that the next leap will hopefully come next year. I don't expect him to stagnate. And my one other thing that I wanted to say, I think that Scotty's 3-point shot will return. Just think of anything you've ever tried to learn. Like, I don't know if you've ever like tried to incorporate a new dribble move into your basketball game. And like during the first quarter, you try it a couple of times and it's like, oh, I'm hitting this exactly as it would sort of look in a textbook. And then you've played 40 minutes and it's the fourth quarter and like you're trying to remember how to do the dribble move and it's like, oh, I'm probably just going to go back to my, you know, my standard game, whatever that is for you, Samson. Scotty played a hell of a lot of minutes, took a hell of a lot of load this year. I think it's no surprise that his 3-point shot dropped off. I think he gets back in the lab next year with, is it Drew Hanlon, his personal trainer?
No, yeah, I can't remember his name right now, but it's not Drew Hanlon. I should remember his name, but
Chris Brickley?
I can't remember his trainer's name actually off the top of head. But yes, gets back in the gym with him and also has like a good debrief with the Raptors who use like their data and film to inform like, hey, we want to see you work on some of this stuff. And he confers with his team about how they want to incorporate that kind of stuff. Sure.
It's coming. I just think that next year is going to be a bit more. I think this is going to be the worst record that the Raptors have for the next few years. That's my bold take. You know, if anyone has listened all the way into this podcast with me rambling because it's 6:30 a.m., that's your payoff. You know, the Raptors are going to be better next year than they are this year. And I would not trade a top four pick if the Raptors were to jump up in the lottery. I think it's in the comments.
To answer, yeah, Andre N. Andre, I think N, yeah. I'm a believer in Scotty's jumper just because his touch is insane. And for me, touch is a really good indicator of being able to like extend range and do all that kind of stuff. Of course, he's had a dreadful shooting stretch basically since Pascal was traded, and it was tailing off a little bit in the new year before that. But I think the touch is really impressive, and he's got really simple mechanics. He's kind of just like letting the touch do the work on his jumper, and which is probably why we got to see such a big jump initially. And, you know, sometimes he's really clunky getting, you know, out of his, you know, his combos into that set shot. But the fact that he made the jump that he did as an above the break shooter, even though it wasn't like a forever change and we did see it come back down, I've seen enough personally. I believe it the same way that you do, that it's, I don't know to what extent it's ticking back up. Well, actually, let's get that answer from you before we get out of here. Like, what, when you say it returns, what does it return to, do you think?
Well, I think as long as his diet is mainly catch and shoot threes as opposed to pull up threes, like, you've got to run before you sprint, let alone, you know, walk before you run, etc. I think as long as his diet is catch and shoot threes, I don't see any reason why we can't return to sort of like 36 to 38%. If he was doing it when he was fully healthy, when all that sort of instruction was fresh in his mind, when there was no load of the trade talk and the rigmarole of the regular season, I think he'll get back to that. You know, fingers crossed, basically. I'm really looking forward to watching Scotty next year when he comes back, or like for the last couple of games of this regular season.
He's a real pleasure to watch. He's a very fun player. Jack, would you like to provide a plug for the listeners before we get out of here? And if you don't 100%. Want to, then I'm happy to do it, you know, as well.
I'll do a little plug, and then Samson, if I've missed anything out, by all means, sing my praises, man. But guys, I've done work with Raptors Republic before. I have had Samson, I've had Trey, I've had Lewis on at multiple points in the season to talk Raptors. It's more of a general NBA podcast, but to do a little reverse plug here, I really, really enjoy Samson's work. I listen to this podcast. I probably won't be listening to this one. I feel like that would be a little bit vain. But I've got a real interest in the Raptors and rebuilding teams. So, guys, if you are looking for a familiar accent like Alex Stockton is in the comments, and you're looking for some fun NBA chat, check out the Drop Step. It will be in the links, etc.
Typically, the downfall of, like, you know, because, you know, people in Canada and America have always been, you know, super obsessed with having, you know, English people provide media for us and speak to us, mm-hmm. and critique us. That's like the whole crux of Simon Cowell's career, I suppose. Right. The downfall is usually like the analysis is not usually that strong across the pond. The good news, listener, is that if you listen to the Drop Step podcast, I think that Jack is like a sublime analyst. And I think that he has like a really unique insight on the NBA. And I also love being able to spring on him randomly across sport comparisons between like footy and basketball. And so if I can co-sign the podcast, is something that, like, you know, I listened before I came on Jack's podcast. I listened to the episode he did with Trey, and I was like, wow, Jack really knows his stuff. And then I had just like a wonderful conversation with Jack as well. So just honestly, if you're looking for like in-depth NBA wide coverage, it's a really, really fun podcast with a ton of great insights. And Jack, he's just a peach of a guy. I enjoy him immensely. That feels like a podcast, yeah? That feels like 100%. We can get out of here.
Hell, I'm blushing.
Yeah. Hell yeah. All right. Nice. From myself, from Brody, from Blake, and from Jack as well, thank you to everybody for listening in. If you'd like to like the video, sure, do that. Subscribing is also free on YouTube. If you want to subscribe to the website and have the means to do so, feel free. It helps keep us alive, as, you know, other seminal figures in the journalism industry collapse. That's all the good stuff. Thank you to everybody. And whether you got into this, from myself and Jack, have a blessed day and goodbye.